This conference is being recorded.
We have this conversation every time, too.
I know. It just seems like it takes a little longer every time.
Yeah. All righty. Well, should we talk about our questions? Who's the moderator today?
I
am.
Yeah.
Okay.
And who's secretary or recorder or whatever?
The recorder is... You are.
Nice to see you, Michael.
Great. Yeah.
So you can be me. You can get the October notes out before I get the September notes.
Well, Tish and I had already started on this, and I was expressing a little, I suppose on my part, a frustration with our goal of setting up multiple choice answers that will capture how people are thinking. And then the frustration goes like this. Now, Tisha sent out a nice example with, say, the psychology-biology class. You're trying to decide which one has stronger evidence of a difference in performance.
Mm-hmm.
There are three choices, either psychology or biology, or they're the same. And those are really the only three choices, or it can't determine, I suppose, the possibility. But if we then try to give a reason why each of those choices is correct, if we only provide three options, you know, like Tisha reasonably did here, we haven't gained anything over just the simple multiple choice of those three options. In fact, we've handicapped ourselves, because if there's some student who has a different reason than we provide, they don't have an appropriate answer. Also, it makes the answer much wordier, so that there's those added complications with just reading and interpreting and so forth. What I've come to conclusion on that, this sort of thing, is we're better off just having the simple alternate choices, but setting up the picture to capture the kind of thing that we want to trap, and not have complicated answers with all, you know, kind of reasoning in our answers. If we want to get at that, we're better off biting the bullet and having a short answer question. You know, we can still deal with the multiple choice as a way to score it, but then if we want the reasoning, we need, I think, a short answer. So anyway, that's my little rant.
Well, I did come up with some of the same problems myself in doing it. Like some of them, there was one where we had, you know, which one has the largest standard deviation, A or B, or they're the same. Well, nobody picked A. The only people who picked A were for such silly reasons that I thought it didn't seem of use to pick that choice in. So I tried to pick B and give a couple of different reasons rather than just have the three choices.
Mm-hmm.
Try to pick a couple more feasible ones without even putting A in, because I couldn't think of a decent reason
right. That
you would choose A.
Implications.
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing you, Michelle.
I am too. It's kind of...
Yeah, the sound is kind of garbled. I don't know. Maybe
you know what? I'll hang up and call back in Skype. If sometimes Skype line is bad, I'll just hang up and call right back.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk too much with Michelle not here. But
right, yeah. So the one point I think would be if she can't think of a good reason for A, we ought to consider whether we want A in there as an option.
Right. I mean, I'm sure you guys had a lot of time to read through my comments on my stuff, given when I sent it out 5 minutes ago. But I made that point for the one question we had where they each drew a sample of size, like Alice was 10 and Ben was 30 and Connie was 50 and Dwayne was 70, and asked about which one is more likely to have a sample standard deviation closer to the population parameter.
Yeah.
I said there's no point in asking all those options.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why don't we just say one person chose 10 and one person chose 20?
Yeah.
You know, but I agree with Dale, I think, and I guess we are having a conversation without Michelle, but I agree with Dale that we're losing something by doing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the question for me is, are we planning this to be a set of questions that gets at people's understanding, or a set of questions that's able to be evaluated electronically with just multiple choice?
Right.
Yep. And okay, so maybe
I can't back.
Oh, great. That's better.
Yep.
Okay.
So maybe this is great timing, Michelle. We don't want to talk too much without you here.
Okay.
We're still talking about the multiple choice thing. And here was my thinking, and maybe I am way off on this, so just let me know. I kind of thought all along our goal was to look at these prerequisites, of course, and then also student understanding of sampling distributions. And I know that last month you guys had some conversation about still having that goal in the back of our minds. I kind of saw this multiple choice thing as an aside, that at JSM we said, well, here's a little quick thing that we could do. Maybe it would help that stat instructor that has 250 students in their section and they can't ask these multiple choice. I'm sorry, they can't ask open-ended questions. I saw this as us just using ours as an example of how to take an open-ended question and pare it down into a good multiple choice. I was still kind of thinking that for our primary purposes, we would keep looking at open-ended things.
Yeah. I think, so let me ask a naive question. I think that when you ask the open-ended questions, you can clearly get at people's knowledge a lot better than the multiple choice questions. How do you analyze it?
That's what I was just thinking. How do you get to, you know?
How do you take an open-ended question and code it? And I know there's supposed to be software out there that helps you do this, and there's people who do qualitative analyses, but I don't know it. You know, and I'd love to learn it. I'd love to learn more about it. But I just don't get how you do it.
I think it partly depends on what kind of question you have. You can write open-ended questions where the responses can be short answer and maybe don't allow much room for people to write or something to keep it really short answer. The risk is you get something where people write a page or two and you try to wade through to figure out what in the world are they saying. But still, in any case, you still have, if you've got the multiple choice up front, you still have that information. The open-ended is value added. It's not taking away from the choice.
This is Bob. I just want to let you guys know I finally joined the conversation.
Oh, good. Thanks.
Hey, Bob.
I just got back from class. Michael, I got a question for you. Before you would give any of these, well, as you guys were creating these problems, you created them to have certain characteristics because you were thinking how students might answer them, right?
Right.
Right.
So ahead of time, I bet you guys could put down a couple of types of answers you would expect. And that would give you a start of a rubric for categorizing responses. And then you might see things that you didn't anticipate, but it's a fair possibility that across all of you, you would have some agreement as to how you would categorize those, too.
And so let's follow up on that. So if we created a rubric and categorized it of what are the common misconceptions that people display about, you know, distributions, whatever we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
we can therefore put them into categories. How do we even then move from there into saying, does someone get the concept of distributional thinking?
Well, you said that some of these are misconceptions. So you would say I guess you could say, here's what they get of the conception. They understand this, but not that. They have this misconception about it. It would also lend itself to some diagnosticity. So if they're giving that type of response, might we hypothesize why or what might help them understand why that's a misconception? And that's not the purpose, I think, of your study at this point, but I'm just kind of speaking to the utility of this activity of trying to categorize them.
I think the most productive approach here is to try to make the alternatives up front capture the misconceptions rather than the answers. That is, if we make the answers to try to capture the misconceptions, we get into the problem of generating a lot of different potential answers, and we may still miss the misconception that a particular person would have, but it would change the nature of the exam to a reading exam, and it just distorts the whole process. If instead we do pay attention to what the alternatives are up on top and construct those so that they would each capture some misconception that we think is likely to be there. I think that's more productive. We currently have some, I think, where nobody's going to pick one particular choice, and that would be a good target for us to see if we can't put a choice up there that would be more diagnostic.
What do you mean by put them up top, Phil?
Well, for example, when we've got, say, the sampling distributions, the one that you're working with, where we've got A, B, C, D, E as the choices, that we construct those very carefully to capture different misconceptions, rather than on the bottom saying, well, choice A because this, or maybe choice A because of that, or choice B because of this, or B because of that. If we try to have it in our answers, we end up having so many that it makes it very cumbersome. But if we have it up on top with the choices, first of all, also that will make it easier to make a multiple choice question where you just have the, the but you don't run into the problem of A, having way too much to read on the bottom, which B, you may miss the reasoning that somebody has, and C, it may distort how people are thinking about things. They'll try to guess what you're trying to, test-taking skills come into play, where you read the alternatives and say, well, they offered two of them that look alike, and here's a third one that's different. I'll go with the one that looks different.
But if we spell out the correct answer and four misconceptions, they might recognize the language of the correct answer without really being able to get it themselves.
That's another good point, yeah. Yeah, so rather than get into that, just simply make the choices up on top, the alternatives, prototypes or capturing the possible different types of misconceptions. Now, an example that Tisha had is there were two reasons why people might pick, this is question D1, where we're looking at how people, which class did better in a math quiz, because of the black class. There, she offers two different reasons why people might pick the pink class, and I think that's good. But we could deal with that another way, is we could have a third choice up top, which would make a distinction between those two different reasons. One of them is symmetrical, and another one is there are more correct choices, if you follow what I'm saying. That would avoid the necessity of having in the potential answers all of that text.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that my thought of the task that we were doing this time was to actually go through and say, if they answer, A for that question, what is the misconception that they're displaying?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of going through and, and if there's one answer that they're giving that might have a couple misconceptions within it, maybe we separate those to different answers. Now, I don't know if we're going to get A through, X on all of our answers to try and capture every possible misconception or combination thereof. And in hearing Dale talk, maybe we approached this all wrong. Maybe what we should do is take our topics and write down what the misconceptions are and then generate questions that address those misconceptions.
And have the alternatives up top be prototypes of each of those.
Yeah.
I don't think we
I know that's a horrible suggestion to say, a year and a half into the process, but...
But I don't think we did anything wrong, because for me personally, some of these misconceptions, I had no idea students had those misconceptions.
Yeah.
I totally saw this.
That's right.
Right. I think it was actually a throwaway in the last question that I did, the graph that had everything at a single point.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one that was the most popular one. Everyone's like, oh, a sample size is one. Everything's at the same as the value. It was almost a throwaway for me that I happened to put it in there, and look what we got.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, that's a point. How would we have found that? That is, would there have been something from the open-ended answers that would have led us there to think, here's a good distractor?
Well, I mean, again, for me, it was actually helpful when I wrote each of these to say for each answer, if they answered, C to that, if they thought graph C, what are they really telling us about their misconceptions?
Yeah.
So again, I'm sure you guys haven't had a chance to look through the stuff that I just sent out, but, for question 13, I said, well, C, if they answer C, students who answer C think that a sample from the population immediately becomes normal, but ignore the shrinking of the standard error.
Okay, so this, I think, is a really good approach.
Okay.
We'll look now at, of the people who gave the different answers, what does that indicate? Now, that's different from saying, how can we write, then, choices for them that will reflect each of those? It may be that the implication is, how do we make options up top that reflect each of those? Yeah.
Okay, yeah, this is good, Mike. I hadn't looked at yours now. I just am looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Oh. Very clear.
Yeah. That's,
you know, and I also included graphs. I thought that was helpful for me to see.
Yep.
A graph with the summary of who answered what.
And we're grateful that you didn't make it a three-dimensional pie graph, which is so popular.
I was actually debating about pie graphs because I've heard people say that pie graphs are just always the worst way to present something. But
no.
That was I read that somewhere. I don't know that I agree with it. I actually don't love pie charts myself. But
depends on what you're doing with it. But yeah, I mean,
right.
For your case here, it makes the point. I have a somewhat related question, actually, for Bob. On the chaos test, which I just gave to a bunch of students, do you have data on the individual responses for individual students such that one could look at, do analyses on that?
Yes, we do. We do analyses on it, too.
Okay, and so you've been doing that sort of thing. So the sort of thing we've been talking about of looking at someone's performance on one question to see how well it predicts performance on another,
mm-hmm.
that data, you would have that data.
Mm-hmm.
Not
yes.
in the summary data that you send out, but you have it. Because I was looking through that chaos test, and, you know, it very nicely does capture a lot of these concepts that we've been talking about, maybe all of them. And so potentially we could use data from that to address some of the questions we started with, is how well does performance on sampling or using graphs predict how well people do on sampling distributions?
And we've talked about that, and our research has not gone in that direction yet, but that's kind of sitting out there to look at.
Is that something that, I don't know, I mean, if you, would you... Would you have, well, I mean, I'd be happy to look at it if you want, but do you want somebody else to look at it, or is it something that...
Yeah, probably not have somebody else look at it, because it represents a nice project that one of our graduate students could do.
Sure. Yeah, but it seems like, it, you know, you really could do the kind of thing that we were talking about earlier.
Yes. There's been some things about, there's a baseball question. I'm trying to remember how this goes.
Oh,
there was the baseball question.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm wondering if that's related to is that related to something with sampling distribution, how they perform on some of the sampling distribution
but,
questions?
Yeah, baseball question is a really good one at dealing with graphs, understanding your graphs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm embarrassed by it. My students, about half of them, pick the normal curve.
Well,
right, the one that looks normal. That's just
well, you've got a normal group of students then.
Yeah, but it's
unfortunately
a really silly graph, you know. Yeah, but then the question is, for people who pick that, is that predictive of differentially predictive then of some of the other skills that you want them to have or knowledge?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so what I'm thinking here is that since you have all that data and you're way down the road on that, that may not be as productive for us to start, you know, working on that exact question. You've got huge amounts of data with some very nice questions.
But I'll tell you one of the differences I see between why and how we developed the chaos test and what you guys are doing is that we did not have the question in our minds of are some of these related, are some of the things that are being measured related to other things that are being measured, and hypothesize what those might be as we were developing the test. The
right.
test was developed to cover certain topic areas and cover them in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are kind of post hoc type questions.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys have an opportunity going in to say, if you think that knowledge in one area should be related to knowledge in another area, what do you think that relationship is? And, or what are the possible relationships? Maybe you can conceive of it more than one way. And so then how would your items allow you to tease that apart?
Yeah. although we still may end up with items that are just similar to the, what you have. That is, that same information would probably be in your data.
Could be.
Well, if we're going to kind of build on what Bob is saying there, our final questions are the ones on the sampling distributions. Those are the ones that we want to link the others to eventually, correct? Is that what our goal is?
I think that's our current goal, with maybe eventually an eye towards hypothesis testing, but I think that is our current goal.
Right.
Yeah. And then it's a question. How many questions does one need to assess that knowledge well? We may not be aiming for that target very well.
Yeah, one isn't great.
Right.
One is not good.
Yeah.
Although it is infinitely better than zero.
Big improvement.
So I'm trying to go a little bit back, looking at some of Michael's questions here, looking backwards a little bit. Here we've got question 13. When you wrote very clearly, what are you testing? That you should produce a distribution that looks similar to the population from which it was drawn. So for them to be able to understand that one, looking backwards, they have to be able to understand what a visual representation of a distribution looks like.
Right.
And then the next one further down below, when they have to realize that it starts to get normal and that the spread becomes standard error decreases, in other words, kind of the standard deviation of the possible values gets smaller, there they have to be able to look at the standard deviation questions and get a feel for how that spread works. So it does seem like we should be able to point back to specific questions, linking our questions to these final ones and predict what we think. Which of our items we think are really essential to understand to doing performing correctly on the sampling distribution questions. And what's 15?
I mean, I think ideally we might want a larger set of questions if this is a main outcome that we're interested in investigating. But I mean, maybe this is a short-term vision, but I'd be really curious to actually try and link that up right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's look at the 26 people, you know, that Dale has on his sheet, along with the ones that Michelle and Tisha have given it to as well, and see whether, you know, we have some data. Can we actually look at some links? How would we do the analysis? That feels a little short-sighted to me, because if we want to create a good instrument, we need to keep working on that. But I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, but I think that's not a bad idea, because the issue of how are we, when we do get lots of data, how are we going to analyze it? It's the same issue even if we have a little bit of data. How are we going to analyze it? What are we going to do with it?
This is Bob, and I think, Mike, I think it's a great idea too, because maybe it would speak to, are you guys going in the right direction? Given what you've stated as your goal, do you have items that are related to each other? If not, do you need to rethink what you're doing, you know, or why aren't you seeing relationships that you think should be there? Mm-hmm. And I was just going to throw in two. So again, with the chaos test, we kind of had the task of taking, I don't know, the 10 to 15 topic areas and having a couple questions related to what we thought were important ideas in each. Whereas you guys have three or four areas that you think might be related to students understanding a sampling distribution. So you have the opportunity to have more questions to measure each one of those better or more completely than what we did on the chaos, and including their understanding of sampling distribution. Mm-hmm. Am I representing that correctly? There's like three or four, like there's like understanding of distribution, understanding of variability, right?
Mm-hmm. And of sampling, some ideas of sampling and random sampling.
Yeah, but I'm wondering all the items that you have on the chaos, they might cluster into some of these, you know, some of the things we were talking about, we found it was really hard to draw sharp around, that I would think that a lot of your items would fall in more than two items per topic from. Well, anyway, so I'm still thinking there's a lot of data in your, in a lot of interesting level there that I hope some graduate student does get on it.
we've got one project going now, and they're looking at kind of the psychometric properties of the items.
Right.
And then once we find out, once we conceptualize that and get the information there, then we'll probably start looking at subsets. And some of the items are like what Andy calls testlets, and that's not his term. I can't remember who coined it. But that they all have the same stem or the same context,
mm-hmm.
and it's several questions about the same context.
Yeah, but sometimes those, they're getting at quite different concepts, even though they've got the same.
Right. You're right about that. But it's still the same topic that they're getting at, about box plots, you know, interpreting box plots or something like that. But you guys are welcome to use whatever's on the chaos, to use any item from there if you see something that's getting at the things you're wanting to get at.
Well, I do like many of those items I think are really very good. Just as a people use that, a test, it gets out. So now they sometimes imagine, I mean, I'm tempted to want to take some of those items and teach directly off those items, use them as a base for a discussion. I mean, do you see problems with that, Bob? Is people sort of testing or teaching that directly off the test?
Well, we don't know if people are or not. What we try to encourage is that people use the topic tests more in that, and so therefore the chaos becomes kind of a summary.
Yeah.
But it's something we don't have control over, and I think in the future it would be good if we did a study where we knew certain people were teaching in a certain way or using them in a certain way, and then only analyze the data from those and that. God, what's the thought I just had? But this is just an aside. I'll just try to make it real quick. I had somebody sign up to give the tests, but it didn't make sense who this person was. It didn't look like they were a faculty member, so I wrote them directly. I said, I can't find you as a faculty member at this institution. Who are you? Why do you want to do this? They said, well, I'm a student, and our teacher's having us take these artist tests. And so what I wanted to do is get some practice with them because they're so different. They're so hard, I think is what she said. So I figured out who her instructor was, and I copied her on the email. I said, well, you should be talking to your instructor. Your instructor needs to do something along that line with you.
Yeah.
But they are challenging questions. I know that. And I guess so I'm saying that because I brought that up because I think we hope that it would affect the way people teach or what people teach, how they teach.
Right.
Thinking about getting their students to be able to answer these questions that would actually affect instruction. That's our hope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're good, I think, discussion. I mean, one way one could use them would be to use them as a starting point for discussion, to say, okay, here's the question, and here's how you did as a class. Now, let's talk about it.
Well, that's what I always did that.
Ah.
Okay. And we encourage that. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, because then the follow-up test is a separate one than different items, I suppose.
No, they're exact same.
The same.
Oh, really? Oh, well, people ought to do quite a bit better than the second time around.
Yeah,
well, you'd be surprised.
So I see now. I see what you're. Yes, now I see what you're saying, though, Dale. I don't use them the way you just said.
Uh huh.
I would give the chaos post test prior to my final exam.
Uh huh.
And so they would take the post test without having discussed the items, even though they took it as a pretest on the first day of class.
Uh huh.
But then we would discuss the items once they took them as a post test.
Before your final.
Before my final, as preparation for conceptual discussion, getting things down.
Yeah. Okay, I could see that working, but I think they could be very useful as a discussion jump off points because they do capture a lot of the conceptions.
You guys, if I can interrupt you for just a minute, we only have about 15 minutes left, and it's almost midnight, and I have a class tomorrow morning that starts at 8. So if we could bring it back a little bit more to focus a little bit on what we want to do now and set up some tasks for the next time, because I'm really, really tired, so I might not be able to be real sharp for much longer, if you don't mind. Sorry about that. I don't usually complain, but tonight I'm really tired.
I'm sure.
Well, that killed the conversation.
No, I'm just shutting up now.
Yeah, I think we're all imagining having this call at 11:30 our time. And
that's exactly right.
Appreciating your flexibility in general. So.
I printed off all the papers to me, and that's as far as I've gotten. But I listened to the notes from last time. I don't know if your minds have changed today, but it sounds like last time, towards the end of the conversation, people were thinking, okay, we could do this paper maybe for Serge with taking open-ended questions and molding multiple choice questions from them. Mm-hmm. But there were going to be a few different components to the lit review, and that's what we needed to be starting. Does that still sound like what we're interested in, or have we all changed our minds today?
No, that still sounds to me like one of the routes we wanted to go in. And I have to say, this process of trying to form multiple choice from the questions that we've got and from the answers that we got already has been a very informative process for me, trying to go back and look at, you know, oh, okay, this test, maybe it's not so good. Nobody picked A. So if nobody picked A, it's not really, I don't really have two good comparisons here. Maybe I need to alter one of my two distributions here to make A a feasible value or change the question altogether. So I think it's been good from that point of view in really digging deeper into the question and trying to figure out what we're trying to test with the question.
Michael, I really like the document you sent out and how you went through each one. Is that what you were talking about with Sharon Lane Gattaz?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, she had a whole table set up that did it, but that's the idea. That's the idea behind it, to say, okay, if they answer this, what is the distractor? What are they really missing in terms of their knowledge base?
Right. Yeah, and I think an implication of this is I was coming at the wrong way, trying to come up with answers that captured every misconception, and I'm really convinced that we instead have to have the choices up front that capture the different misconceptions. And if there's some that nobody ever picks, take it out and maybe try to split. You know, if there's some choice that people will make but give two different reasons, try to see if we can't come up with two different alternatives that would separate them.
Right. I was also going to say that made me think of from before when you talked about the biology and the psychology of answers. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we can't parse that into biology because, psychology because.
Well, see, that's what I'm thinking of gets us into trouble. If we try to come up with two different reasons for each one, we still won't get them all. The answers, now you have to read quite a bit, and it can be a bit confusing to try to see, now, how does C different from B and so forth, that we'd be better off. For right now, for example, the choice for... Well, currently what we have is just three possible choices, and so there's nothing gained by giving a potential reason for each of those three choices. We'd have to think, would there be more than one reason why people might pick biology? And if so, maybe you have a third class that would have that characteristic different from what the biology shows. I think it's clear maybe with the one with the black and pink classes, where one of the reasons to pick the pink was because it is symmetric. Another reason to pick pink is because there were more correct answers. That's really easy to separate. We could have a green class that's got a beautiful normal distribution, but it may be a smaller frequency, and then leave the and then do something with the pink class where it maybe isn't quite so symmetric, but it's got the most correct answers in it. And then it would be really clear if somebody picks the green class, it's because of the symmetry. If they pick the pink class, it's because of the more correct answers.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, and it'd be easy then to score, and it would be easy to read.
I agree with that. I would say the one caveat I was thinking about in trying to evaluate my questions is we might have to pilot it again with people's explanations. Even though we think we know why they're answering that, we might want to do a test run of having it open-ended again and have people say why they chose it and look for people who come up with a reason that we didn't even think about that also is justified by the choice.
Yeah, no, I think so. I learned a lot from looking at those reasons people give.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing you see is people often can't give a coherent reason.
So maybe for next time, I would like to go through and do with some of the distributional thinking questions what Michael has done with the sampling distribution ones. And I have access to a lot of students this semester. Maybe I can give get some more open-ended responses to make part of this process so it's not just 26 people that we're working from. Does that sound reasonable?
That would be great.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I'll try to do the same. Likewise for the format of the questions here. Try to identify clearly what we'll try to get at. I think I'm going to change one of the two questions too.
Yeah, I'd suggest on the one with the pink and black class, just you know, the thought of having a third class in there that has smaller frequency but is symmetric, and then. You know, pink class make it not quite so symmetric, so we can separate the symmetry from the most frequent. That'd be relatively easy to do.
Do you think, in terms of this round, though, where we're just getting more open-ended opinions again, that that's necessary at this point, or just to see?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm thinking that's one lesson we'll learn from the open. What's what we learned already from the open-ended? If we could take a step toward, if we're going to go the direction of trying to have alternatives on top that pick up each of the different misconceptions, we could start working on that.
One other thing, I don't know if anybody got the other email. I sent out a couple of them today, but I know last time there were people talking about histograms, issues with whether students even know how to read them. And there was one question, Bob, it's from All of Your Things. I think it was a pretest for your sampling distribution activity.
Okay.
And it was just a histogram. What do the values on the x-axis and the y-axis? I can't remember exactly.
Yep, that's what it is. I've got it in front of me here.
Yeah.
But I noticed in your conversation last week that somebody had mentioned, well, maybe we should add one like that. I don't know if that's a question that people were thinking of, or if I had something else in mind, and if there's any value of if we're going to do a second round to get open-ended questions of adding that one right now.
I think it would be good. I was struck with how much trouble some people had with just interpreting distributions. You know, like we take it for granted because we worked with it so much, but some people just really blow it. And if their problems are at that level, that's going to have important implications. So yeah, I'd say yeah. Let's put something. Try to get at can people you know understanding of just graphs and how
right.
You read.
There was actually a similar one that I saw that essentially was bars of exactly the same height with the same shape, but in one situation the bars were more spread out with gaps in the middle.
Yeah.
So if one were to look at the height of the bars and talk about the variability, it's identical between the two graphs.
Yeah.
But if they're to look at the variance based on the distribution itself, they would see that there is a difference in distributions. And I thought that was a nice way of asking, do they understand how to read a histogram?
That was on the question 6 and 7 for the standard deviation ones.
That document, I'm sorry, the document I sent today had two questions on it.
But the one you're talking about, two questions, I think the one Michael's talking about
right,
is
six. Thank you. That's essentially the one I was talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
The one that, I'm sorry, I didn't even see that I saw that other one in there. The one in terms of just reading histogram, too, was on the second page of that pretest questions document that I sent today.
So yeah, where you have the questions about
test scores.
What do the numbers on the x-axis represent? What are the numbers on the y? How many people took the test? Those ones, yeah, I think that's pretty.
Bob, that's from your group, right?
Pretty good, straightforward.
Written down at least.
Mm-hmm.
we want to add those questions if we do another round of this? Or is it too much to...
I would say it's probably worth it to add it and then see what we get.
Yeah, if it doesn't, if you've got, if you're willing to do that to your students.
The only thing I would change on the second one is how many people receive scores of 4 or higher. I would just change that to higher than 4. Because that 4 is right on the border of that third class. And so sometimes it's a little tricky to know whether that the 4 is included in that class or included in the 4 to 5 class.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I got that printout. That was Michelle, right, who sent that?
No, Tisha sent it 2:31 p.m. today.
2:30.
Oh.
But Dale, I sent you 3 emails today. I got your message saying that you hadn't gotten mine. Did you get any emails from me today?
I'll go look.
Because I keep getting things back that when I send them to send to all, I get them back from you saying it couldn't be delivered, but I get it back maybe 3 days later.
That's interesting. No, I didn't get it today. Maybe that my email address isn't right. Can check it. It should just be
dale.berger@cgu.edu, right?
Yep, and Berger is B-E-R-G-E-R.
Right, yeah, because I even hit reply to the ones that you send me and get them back, so I'm not sure what's going on.
Ah, we might be having some problem at this end. That's interesting, because I did get emails from Tisha and Michael. Huh.
Michelle, I got one from you yesterday. I didn't get anything from you today. Did you send something to everybody today?
No, I think I just sent to Dale today because he said to me that I had heard from Tisha's that you had sent something out and I don't have it. So I tried sending it back to him today a couple times.
Yeah, thanks. Maybe Michael or Tisha, you could forward it and I'll see if I can track. I don't know if it seems weird that it's only from Michelle.
Well,
Dale, it sounds like possibilities that might be blocking her email address.
But Dale, did you get an email that I sent today?
I'll look in my spam folder for you, Michelle.
Okay. Take me out of your spam folder. I'm highly offended.
So I just sent, well, I doubt it's actually, it matters whether it's Dale specifically, because it's probably university-wide, maybe.
Yeah,
but
they're,
I guess depending on how it's considered.
I sure didn't do that, but but strange.
I am resending Michelle's email out to everybody, and we can see if Dale gets it or
thank you.
What happens.
Okay.
Yeah, great. Great. Well, let's see. So we're going to run out of time here. We should decide on our next meeting, and we should also see our agenda for what we want to do next. For our next meeting. About November.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, just a caution, in November, daylight savings time is on November 2nd. I sent out a revised notes for our group where I have that information in it. I don't know if everybody got that yet, but so we're going to be on standard time then. So then
I think I change a week before you, but I'll double check it.
Okay. Okay.
I remember that happened last year. We changed too, but we changed a week or two before you, I think. So I'll find out, or a week or two after. I can't remember,
okay.
But I'll double check.
Okay, well, let's see. Should we pick a date in November?
Yep.
Let's see. I don't know. November 4th.
What day of the week works for people?
I'm going to be away at a conference on the first week. But say the second week, starting like the 11th, is that a good day? That's a Tuesday?
Sure. Any day is good for me except Friday.
That would work with me. You said Tuesday the 11th?
Tuesday the 11th? If that'd be just like the day.
The earliest I could go is 3:30. So if Michelle, if this is too late for you.
No, this is okay. This is just a really busy week, so I'm fine at this hour. I'm just tonight in a fatigued state. So I'll be fine by November.
So we would do it again then at, let's see, it was
3:30 is actually good for me.
Well, you want to do one
and
a half hour?
Which is 4:30 my time, right?
Yes.
That's good for me, so I can try and get
home
for dinner.
Okay, pick a time. What time are you saying?
4:30 Eastern, 3:30 Central, 1:30 Pacific.
10:30.
10:30 Marco.
Okay. Got it.
That's okay with me.
All right. And then just Bob here. My class goes till 3:45, and students ask questions. I usually don't get out of there till 4:00. So I'll just be coming in probably on the tail end, you know, just kind of hearing what you guys are summing up in that on this next one. All right?
Okay.
You won't hurt your feelings if we meet with
you. You won't hurt my feelings, but I'll try to come in, and then if you guys have any questions for me, you can certainly
okay.
Add.
Okay. So I'm planning to get more information from students and then to do what Michael has done. I'll send out all of the responses that I get so you guys can have more too.
Great.
And then I'm planning to do what Michael did, and I'm also going to try to read some of the papers that Andy and Bob and Michelle, whoever had sent all those to me.
Okay, I think Bob sent them to all of us and sent
thank
a whole
you,
big
Bob.
Zip file. Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, good stuff.
Do you want us, Tisha, for the ones that you want to give to students, do you want to try some of the multiple choice and some only open-ended, or do we want to make them all open-ended?
Are we okay with open-ended one more time around and see?
I think, well, it works well to have they make the choice, so it is a multiple choice. We have the multiple choice information, but then have the short answer why. Right.
Okay.
In my mind, I'm still kind of thinking this process of taking the open-ended and molding it into a multiple choice, but I'd like to have more than 26 responses to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. And you'll throw in the histogram questions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That would be great. I'm teaching all graduate classes right now, so I don't have any undergrads. But I can check with my colleague and see if he'd be willing to do that. He may. He did it for me last spring.
There's some nice histogram questions on the chaos, you know, where there's like 4 different histograms, and then to interpret which one you think came from an easy test,
which type of data, yeah.
Is that the one you're thinking of? It's like 4 different questions. There's another one on the baseball, which people get wrong. Anyway. What I'm suggesting is there's some nice things right off the chaos that would work.
And
anything else over there?
So are we, I'm thinking back to what Tisha said. Are there 3 papers that we're kind of thinking and working on right now? Sorry, I've got papers on the mind, but the lit review, are we still talking about turning that into a paper? And we talked about the paper on making multiple choice questions from open-ended questions, and we have kind of our main paper once we finally get a test and gather data and analysis on that.
I think potentially, yeah. I don't know. We should probably pick one at a time and do it.
Right.
I kind of see the lit review as being part of both of the other ones.
So not a separate paper by itself.
You know, it could turn into it, I suppose. I think we've been doing that for a year and haven't yet. For me personally, I would kind of like to do the multiple choice one first, because I think we have a lot of interesting stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're close. But yes, I still hope that we can work towards that other goal with relating all these things.
Okay.
Should we try to flesh out an outline? Because we talked about that a little bit last time for doing something on the multiple choice. Because the multiple choice, if we were to write something on that, we can start a bit with the concepts that we're interested in testing, then talk about how the kinds of questions that we've come up with, and then go through the process of going towards multiple choice using some of the references that we got from Bob.
Mm-hmm.
So we can kind of combine the two.
So there are two different things in the lit review there, I think.
Yeah, the concepts and the writing the test items.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Should we try to go for that one in the mm-hmm. relatively near future?
Mm-hmm. That sounds good to me.
Yeah,
sure.
Do you want to take a shot at outlining that? Is that what you're saying?
Okay.
You just did.
Yeah, I'll take a shot at outlining it. I can flesh out an outline pretty quickly. Filling it in, that takes a lot of time.
Well, if you start with an outline, I'll start
sure.
filling in part of it.
Yeah, I okay. think even a really crude outline is helpful to get started.
Okay. All right. I'll be in charge of a crude outline.
That'd be great. Thanks, Michelle.
Okay, guys, I've got to say goodnight.
I have to get going, too. On to the next thing. Got to go work out and get home in time for the debates.
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to miss the debates tonight. I'll catch the summary tomorrow.
Okay. You might be able to wake up to see them in the morning.
Exactly. Well, thank you, everybody. Excuse my bad humor tonight.
Well,
and talk to you
time.
Soon. Okay.
All right. All right.
Bye,
bye,
everybody.
Take care, everyone.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.